All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to continue our program. I hope you enjoy dinner. Please continue to enjoy your dessert and coffee, but you will not want to miss anything that our speaker has to say tonight. So go ahead and if you'd like, feel free to turn your chair around to get comfortable so you can enjoy what Dennis Prager has to say tonight. Dennis Prager is a best-selling author, columnist, and nationally syndicated radio talk show host based in Los Angeles. His radio show is heard by over 2 million listeners on 150 stations across the country. His New York Times best-selling books include Think a Second Time, Happiness is a Serious Problem, and Still the Best Hope, Why American Values Must Triumph. His new book, to be released in April of this year, will be the first of a five-volume Torah commentary entitled The Rational Bible. His nonprofit venture, Prager University, is a virtual university on the internet with a powerful twist. I wish they would have had this when I was in college. All the courses are only 5 minutes long. In 2017 alone, PragerU had over 5 million views on YouTube and Facebook, making it by 500 million. Did I say 5 million? All right, I'm sorry. I took away from it. Yeah, that's, two zeros make a difference unless you're in Washington, D.C., then zeros matter not. In this past year, 500,000 million views on YouTube. 500 million. I can't help it. I'm in Washington. We don't do anything with numbers up there. 500 million views on YouTube and Facebook. Did I get it, Dennis? I got it right. All right. Making it by far the largest producer and distributor of non-liberal video content in the world. Now, I would imagine that I'm not going to do any Prager shaming in here tonight, but I would imagine all of you have seen his videos of Prager University, right? But they are brilliant. They are just so well done. So if you have not made use of those, please do. Dennis and his wife, Susan, make their home here in California, and Dennis said that just as always, every time he talks, he'll be taking phone calls at the end of his speech, so he'll take your questions, so be prepared, and welcome Dennis Prager to the stage.
Thank you very much. Wow, thank you all so much. I thank you, Tony, for the kind words. I just need to tell you, it is so intimidating to get a standing ovation before you speak. I have never gotten used to that because how can I possibly meet your expectations? I remember speaking in Los Angeles once in Hollywood on the anniversary. It was amazing they invited me, but I go to these things. If I'm invited to speak, I'll get my ideas across. It was on the some anniversary of Deep Throat, the best known pornographic film ever made, I believe. And all I was booed. The entire, from when I was introduced till I finished speaking, I was booed the whole time. And I felt good, because that was okay, because, I won a few people over. You can only pleasantly surprise people, but in your case, I can only disappoint. So that's the reason I mentioned that. Thank you for the kind welcome. It's an honor to be here. You do very important work. We are doing the same work in different ways, obviously, and I will tell you what that work is right now, and give you some thoughts, and then my favorite part is to open up for questions, comments, and brief alternate speeches. The reason I add that, I have been speaking for 40 years, and I get them anyway, so all I ask is that they be brief. I don't care. You can make a statement. You don't have to ask a question. The United States of America is engaged in a civil war. I have described it as a civil war for years now. I thank God that it is overwhelmingly peaceful, but it is as much a civil war, and in some ways more so, than the one in the 19th century, in the 1860s. This as odd as this sounds, but I took a vow when I started broadcasting never to exaggerate, because credibility is all you have. So I'm not exaggerating when I say that the differences between right and left in America today are greater than the differences between the South and the North in the Civil War. They differed really about one thing. That one thing was very, very big. No question, it's one of the great moral versus immoral ideas in human history. But beyond that, they both loved America. They both loved liberty, at least for non-slaves, and so on. I mean, they shared values. But there is the gulf between right and left in America is unbridgeable. And that's why I have reached the sad conclusion that calls for unity are naive. Anyone who calls for unity in any event, I learned this very early in my career, almost everyone who calls for unity isn't being intellectually honest, because they really, anyone who does, wants unity on their terms. I'll never forget, I learned this in a completely non-political way. My first radio show was the moderator of the ABC radio in Los Angeles. I was the moderator, priest, rabbi, minister, each Sunday night for 2 hours. It was an extremely popular show, different priests, different rabbis, different ministers each week. And every so often, the rabbi would call for Jewish unity, or the priest would call for Christian unity, and the pastor would call for Christian unity. But whenever I pressed them, it was unity on their terms. When Orthodox rabbis called for unity, they wanted all Jews to be Orthodox. When non-Orthodox rabbis wanted it, they wanted all Jews to be non-Orthodox. When Protestants said it, they weren't prepared to recognize the Pope. Let's have Christian unity as Protestants, and Catholics were not prepared to give up the papacy for unity with Protestants. So it was baloney. Everybody calling for unity meant, let's all unite around my values. I don't blame these people. I would love everybody to unite around my values, but I never call for unity because it's not valid. This is terrible. Bothers me to say, but if we don't defeat the left, America loses. That is what it amounts to. And let me tell you a very important thing to say to your relatives. By the way, raise your hand if you don't have any liberal relatives. That's my wife raising her hand, but you have to understand, she doesn't include my family. So that's, I'm not talking blood, just family. Really, seriously, everybody does. I mean, let's be honest, okay? So there is a very important thing that you can do, and it's totally honest. It's not a gimmick, but it's very powerful. You must ask your relative or friend, are you a leftist or a liberal? There is nothing in common between liberalism and leftism except big government. They have no other values in common. I am much closer to a liberal than I am to a leftist. With a liberal, I can dialogue. I don't have to defeat liberals. I have to defeat leftists. And here is a classic example. Liberalism believed in racial integration. Liberalism believed that race does not matter. Leftism believes race matters. Leftism believes in black dorms, in black graduations. Liberals didn't. That was called segregation. Segregation was considered racist. Liberalism hated racism. Leftism thrives on racism. That is the difference. On every issue, Franklin Roosevelt was a liberal, a very far liberal, but a liberal. He spoke regularly of the need to defend Western civilization, even Christian civilization. That's what liberals believed in, Western civilization. When President Trump spoke about defending Western civilization in Warsaw, the entire left, I mean LA Times, New York Times, NPR, Washington Post, NBC, ABC, CBS, the whole gamut, said this was a dog whistle to white supremacy. The idea of defending Western civilization is dismissed as a white supremacist idea by the left. Liberals love or loved Western civilization. The left despises it. So there are many differences, and you make this clear to your relative and friend. Alan Dershowitz is a prominent liberal, Harvard Law School professor, Hillary Clinton supporter, lifelong Democrat. He said to me, it is on film, on video, just 2 months ago in his apartment in New York City, because we were making a film with Adam Carolla called No Safe Spaces, which will be out at the end of this year, about what is happening at our universities. This is Alan Dershowitz, Harvard Law School, lifelong liberal Democrat. My enemy is the left, not conservatives. Because he's a liberal. Liberals, unfortunately, are weak. They are not bad, they're weak. They don't understand what Dershowitz does. Their enemy, the enemy of liberalism, is leftism. The friend of liberalism is conservatism. We believe in open. We believe in free speech. We believe in free markets. We believe in Western civilization. We believe in tolerance. The left doesn't believe in any of those. So just, you must keep that in mind in fighting. If it's not good enough to have the right values, you have to know how to fight for them. It's as simple as that. Wanting to win doesn't bring victories. Knowing how to win brings victories. So that's the first thing I need to explain, that in this civil war, it is not between liberals and conservatives. It's between left and everybody else. That's what has happened. And the left has taken over just about everything. As I have said over and over, and this is another way of understanding the world in which we live, in the last 100 years, the most dynamic religion in the world by far has not been Christianity, has not even been Islam. It has been leftism. That is the most dynamic religion in the world of the last 100 years. And here's the really bad news. That's bad enough. It, leftism, has influenced Judaism and Christianity far more than Judaism and Christianity have influenced the world. That is why mainstream Protestantism, the Pope himself in the Vatican, and non-Orthodox Judaism have been taken over by the left. They are indistinguishable from leftism. One of the most high authorities in the Vatican last week announced that the country that embodies Catholic social justice principles and indeed, biblical principles the most is China. One of the highest Vatican officials announced that. The Pope, last year when the French priest was slaughtered while saying Mass, was asked on a plane going back the next week from Poland, where there was World Youth Day, to Rome, was asked by a French Catholic reporter, Holy Father, why don't you speak out more against Islamic terror? And he said, well, why would I? I don't speak out against every baptized Catholic in Italy who kills his girlfriend. I'll let that sink in. That response is moral idiocy. There is a comparison between vast numbers of people who murder in the name of a religion and people who happen to be baptized into a faith killing their girlfriends? I mean, it's so elementary that it's that they have nothing in common. Did all these baptized Catholics kill their girlfriends in the name of Christ? If so, there would be a parallel. But there is no parallel. This is so it is simply taken over the religions outside of pockets of traditional Christianity in Christendom and traditional Judaism within Judaism. Outside of that, and not to mention, it has taken over the secular world. So I want to address the secular world for a moment because I want to address an item that is troubling to me, and that is the absence of the God factor in conservative life. To understand what I'm about to say, let me just make clear another thing that will always help you in making the case for America and conservatism, and that is, what is America? What is American values? What are American values, or what are conservative values? I have a very quick answer. America has a Trinity, just like Christianity does, and I didn't make it up. It's on every coin. And they are liberty, e pluribus unum, in God we trust. It's on every coin. That's America's Trinity. So conservatives stand for two of the three. Some conservatives stand for three. Many, especially the conservative intellectual class, does not stand for one of them. All conservatives stand for liberty. All conservatives stand for e pluribus unum, from many one. But only religious conservatives stand for in God we trust. As far as most conservative intellectuals are concerned, in God we trust is as irrelevant to the American project as it is to the left. And there's a reason. They all went to college. They were conservatives are as influenced as to the irrelevance of God as liberals are. They don't buy controlled markets. They don't buy a big state. That's true. And God bless them if they want God's blessings. But I mean it. I am thrilled to have my fellow writers at National Review argue the cases that they do and articulately do. But it is pretty rare among the intellectual class in conservative life that God is regarded as necessary to the American project. In God we trust is just a sweet, archaic phrase, just as much for most conservatives, at least the intellectuals, as it is for everybody on the left. But they're wrong. And there's a certain oddity about it because they say they revere the founding fathers. But to the founding fathers, God was instrumental to the American project. Not all of the founders were Christian in the sense of accepting the Christian Trinity. But all of the founders were God-centered and Bible-centered, all of them. I have quoted often Benjamin Franklin's autobiography, and he's always dismissed as, oh, he's secular or he's a deist. Not true. Benjamin Franklin believed that there was a God whose providence controls the world. He wrote this. I'm not making this up as a paraphrase. He wrote this. He believes that God judges every individual and there is reward and punishment after death. Okay, is that a deist? No, a deist believes in a God who doesn't know us, who created the world and then retired. Now, none of them were deists in the sense that people understand deism. They were all God-centered and Bible-centered people. They understood the American project is not doable without God. And the most obvious, there are many obvious reasons, but let me give you one. And that is, you can only have what all conservatives agree is essential conservative belief. You can only have a small government if you have a big God. As God shrinks, government gets bigger. That is the, look at Western Europe. That is, it's inevitable. They understood, because it's just common sense. You don't need a degree in philosophy. You need nothing. An eighth grader can understand this. And that is that if people will either feel responsible morally to the state or to God. The idea that they will feel moral responsibility to their conscience is only something that a person who went to graduate school could believe, because it's so stupid. And you have to go to graduate school to believe something truly stupid. And that, by the way, is an example. You are going to trust that people will do good answering to their own conscience? Are you an idiot? It's a rhetorical question. Of course they're an idiot. I can't tell you this issue of human nature not being basically good, which is the classic Judeo-Christian belief that human nature is problematic, to say the least, okay? Secularists don't believe that. We're basically good. All a kid needs is a lot of love and a good education, and they'll be a wonderful human being. That's what they believe. But it's not true. A lot of love and a lot of education is a well-educated barbarian. You need standards. You need to feel morally accountable for your behavior. To whom will you be morally accountable? The founders understood to a God who has a moral code, who judges human beings. If you are morally accountable, if you are, to use a phrase that is dead, God-fearing, you might be a better person. I just finished volume one of my 5 volumes, commentary on the Torah, the first 5 books of the Bible. It's called The Rational Bible. I have no compunctions. The only book I've ever begged people to buy, because I want the Bible to return to being America's book. If it isn't, we're doomed. And this makes this book, it's called The Rational Bible because I only use reason to explain each of the 5 first books of the Bible. And in it, there is a phenomenal story of the midwives who were told by Pharaoh to kill the Jewish boys who were born, the Hebrew boys, the Israelite boys. Anytime an Israelite boy is born, throw him into the Nile and drown him. But they didn't. Do you know why? The Bible tells us why they didn't listen to Pharaoh. Remember, Pharaoh was not just the king. Pharaoh was a god. Vatirena, I always feel that I'm showing off, but I don't mean to. But if I didn't know Hebrew as well as I do, I couldn't have done the commentary. So it says, Vatirena hamiyaldot et ha'elohim. The midwives feared God. Elohim, most of you even know. That's the reason. In other words, they didn't fear Pharaoh. They feared something more than Pharaoh, God. We, the American people, were founded on the belief that you either fear the state or you fear God. People who fear God will be better. Bonhoeffer feared God more than Hitler, so he died rather than serve Hitler. Too few Christians feared God more than Hitler. It is a tragedy, but that's what happened. You have to fear God. There's one other being you're supposed to fear. You know who that is? Your parents. It's very powerful. This stuff is awesome. I did a show once on my radio show. I couldn't have not have done this. I needed a lot of things in my life to be able to write this commentary. One was obviously a knowledge of Hebrew like English, but that was not enough. The talk show, talking to millions of people for 30 years has been terrific. So I did once, whatever subject I care about, I talk about. It's not just news, my show. And one day I said, we're going to spend the next hour. I want you to tell me if you didn't use drugs when you were a kid, why didn't you? You know what the most common answer was? Because my mother would have killed me. How do you like that? I feared my mother. That's why they didn't use drugs. And by the way, I make the point, not one person called in to say, because I loved my mother. We have wildly exaggerated the importance of love. That is one of the false gods of the modern age, and this is a perfect example. The midwives did not disobey Pharaoh because they loved God. They disobeyed Pharaoh because they feared God. We are drunk on the subject of love. Trudeau, the Prime Minister, I was going to say an adjective, but I won't. Just the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister of Canada at this time, Justin Trudeau, a giant of a man, a man whose depth is unfathomable by mere mortals, was asked by a woman, this is really important, he was asked by a woman at some public forum in Canada just last week. You can hear it. And she got up, and I don't know what she represented, but I don't know. I don't even know if she was a conservative or liberal, and it doesn't matter at all. Anyway, she spoke about how in order for mankind to be better, and then he corrected her. We don't say mankind in Canada. We say people kind. Okay, so that's what everybody is concentrating on as the absurdity. But I picked up a second absurdity. She said, in order to make a great world for mankind, what we need is more maternal love. But she's wrong. Well, was there a lack of maternal love in Nazi Germany? Mothers in Germany didn't love their children? She's totally wrong what she said. Totally. There was nothing valid in that statement, and no one picked up on it because we're love drunk. The Bible is not love drunk. Yes, we are commanded to love God, and we are, by the way, just parenthetically, part of my commentary, you know why God tells us to love him? Because he knows he's not lovable. That's why. You don't command people to do what they do naturally. Love of God is not natural. There's too much suffering on earth, so people don't naturally love God. This is great stuff. I love this. I love these books. They have shaped my life, and I want them to shape others' lives because there's so much truth there. By the way, you're never told to love your parents. Never. Love the stranger. Love your neighbor. Love God. In the New Testament, love your enemy. But you're never told to love your parents. Your parents you have to honor. And you're never told to honor anybody else except your parents. This is very powerful stuff. But, of course, we don't need the Bible. Ho-ho! We got the New York Times editorial page. Though that's what they believe. That's what they believe. When the managing editor, the last managing editor of the New York Times, I forgot her name, when she was appointed, she said, and it was fascinating, because even a lot of non-conservatives picked up on it, her reaction was, I'm so honored. In my home, the New York Times was the Bible. That was her comment when she was appointed managing editor of the New York Times. They got rid of it. You can't find it now on the New York Times website. You can find it because others kept it. But the New York Times website scrubbed it out. Because it's so, but it could, boy, it's so true that she was totally, literally accurate. It's the Bible or the New York Times editorial page. This is the battle. This is what we are engaged in. And conservatives, most conservatives don't know this. They don't understand that God is central, even if you're an atheist. I get calls from atheists all the time. I agree with you, Dennis. I happen not to believe in God, but you're right. If America drops God, it's doomed. The American experiment is doomed. You don't have to be a believer to understand what I'm saying. I wish that guy weren't an atheist for his sake. Because he'd have a happier and richer and deeper life, but that's fine. But he's intellectually honest. A lot of people who believe in God don't think God is necessary. That's the irony of ironies. Finally, let me tell you an interesting thing, an observation about the Bible and God. So you who are evangelicals, you get a lot of flack if you support Donald Trump. I read it all the time. You're hypocrites, you're phonies, you're giving evangelical Christianity a bad name. I wrote a piece. I write a syndicated column. My column is in National Review, Town Hall, and elsewhere. Last week, my column was a defense in defense of evangelical support for Donald Trump. And since I'm a Jew, it resonates because I don't have an axe to grind. So, you know, this drives Jews crazy, but other than that, you know, what this Prager, he's out of his mind. He loves these evangelicals. Doesn't he understand? They just want to convert him. And I get that. You have no idea how often I get that. And if you actually, the truth is, my wife knows, She calls it Dennis's porn because it's so riveting and I can't get away from it. My email. My email is so interesting, you have no idea. Jews are yelling me about this. Christians are yelling me about that. Leftists are yelling me about this. It's awesome. And again, it really is. And I try to respond whenever possible and so on. Anyway, so I wrote this piece, and let me explain to you my theory. Why is it that evangelicals who are not pro-adultery, we acknowledge that, all right? And or pro a whole host of other sins, alleged or real, of the president. Why would so many of them support the president? So I will tell you why. For the same exact reason this religious Jew does. It's the exact same reason. Because we get our wisdom from the Bible, not from the New York Times editorial page. God uses sinners to do a lot of good. That's the way it is. And my favorite, King David, is the obvious example. I mean, King David makes the president look like Saint Thomas Aquinas. I don't even know what the analogy would properly be. You got to be kidding me. King David not only commits adultery, he has the husband killed. Nobody has thus far accused Donald Trump of murder. All right, they may come up with one, but they haven't yet. All right? So just on those grounds alone, and God uses King David, I know, so then people say, yeah, but King David later repented. He repented because a prophet from God came. I assure you, if a prophet from God came to the president for whatever sins, he'd repent too. All right? It's a silly argument. He did a lot of bad stuff, and God chose him. But my favorite example is not King David; it's Rahab. There were a lot of people in Canaan God could have chosen to get the chosen people into the chosen land, into the promised land. He chooses a prostitute. So listen, this was the ultimate. So I won't say his name because he's not here to defend himself, but I'm inviting him onto my show. A very prominent conservative says, I can't believe, you know, I so respect Dennis Prager. I can't believe he wrote this article. What, you know, it's so, and then he uses Rahab, but Rahab was a penitent. So my wife and I decided maybe we didn't know the story that well. She had repented of being a prostitute prior to God using her to enable the Israelites to go into the, So his argument to prove that she was penitent was she invoked God's name when the Israelites, the spies, came to sleep at her place. So what? Donald Trump uses God's name all the time too. No, I'm not being cute. Why does that make you a penitent? The odds are she was a prostitute prior to it and a prostitute afterwards. And that was it. God used a prostitute. Why didn't he use the nicest person in Canaan? Right? A Noah of Canaan. But he used Rahab. So we who take the Bible seriously, unlike the secularists, we actually understand that God is teaching a lesson here. Sometimes the greater good is more important than the character or individual sinning of an individual. There are larger things at play. We who read the Bible understand that. That's why this Jew who believes in the Bible supports Donald Trump, and you Christians who believe in the Bible do. I'm not saying all of you do. I don't know all of you, but I'm talking in generalities. Because I understand there are very big issues here, much bigger than how nice Donald Trump is in private. That is between Donald Trump and his God and his wife, and that's where it ends. As far as I am concerned, I care about these enormously grave moral issues of our society. And if whatever you and I care about, he is infinitely preferable to Hillary Clinton or any living Democrat. You have a choice often in life. This is another wisdom thing. IMC, I'm down to zero. I don't want to open up for questions, but I want to get this point. In life, I realize more and more, we have a sort of choice very often. Do you want to feel good or do you want to do good? They're not the same. It makes a lot of conservatives feel good. Look, we are much purer than the president and much purer than the Democrats. So therefore, it would have been better if a Democrat, specifically Hillary Clinton, had won the presidency. But what if we lost America while being pure? Why is that a victory? It doesn't make sense to me. You're telling me that all the judges that he has appointed are invalidated because of his private comments about women made in private? And by the way, here's another thing. I can't speak for Christians on this one because I went to yeshiva 15 years. That's Orthodox, half-day Jewish studies in Hebrew, half-day secular studies in English. It's an immersion. And we learn a very powerful idea in Judaism, and that is that private and public are not the same. I can give you the obvious example. If you urinate privately, no one really has a problem. If you urinate publicly, most people outside of San Francisco do have a problem. Is that not fair to say? There's a great example. The exact same act privately is a non-issue, and sexual intercourse privately is fine. Publicly is not fine. Cursing privately, well, you might say is not fine, but it's not comparable. If you use that word in pillow talk with your spouse because you're passionate about something, is not the same as Eric Garcetti, the mayor of Los Angeles, when the LA Kings won the Stanley Cup, announcing in front of tens of thousands of kids, "This is an effing great day for Los Angeles, and I know politicians shouldn't curse." So he knew what he was doing. That's a big difference. What people say privately doesn't matter to the rest of the world. Harry Truman used kike regularly on postcards to describe Jews. And he was the man who recognized Israel against the entire State Department telling him not to do so. Thank God for the kike using Harry Truman. Turned out to be the greatest friend the kikes ever had. People are not wise. The reason people are not wise is because they're irreligious. Secularism breeds foolishness. It does. You can be brilliant in secular, but not wise. There is no wisdom in secular literature, virtually none. Shakespeare quoted the Bible more than any secular writer today can imagine. So they don't understand private and public. By the way, I hold this for the other side too. I have a piece in the Wall Street Journal from the 1990s defending Hillary Clinton against charges of anti-Semitism because she called a Jewish guy who ran her husband's campaign that lost in Arkansas, she called him an effing Jew. Effing Jew boy or whatever it was. And I said, I do not judge Hillary Clinton by her private comment. I do not believe she's an anti-Semite. I didn't believe Nixon was an anti. Nixon saved Israel's life in the Yom Kippur War after his talks about the Jews in politics privately. I don't care. There isn't a person in this room, a pastor, a pastor's wife, a truly holy person in this room, who if every private comment were ever made public would come out looking wonderful. It is none of my business what you say privately, period, end of issue. I know nothing about you by your private comments. I have cursed out every group of Americans on the road, every single one. If you drive slowly in the left lane, I hate you and I hate your group. Yeah. I am the quintessence of racism. I'm an anti-Semite on the road. See a guy with a yarmulke slow in the left lane. Oh, those Orthodox Jews, they don't know how the hell to drive. You should go back to yeshiva. We're not wise. We've lost the wisdom. Conservatives need to understand we need God and we need the Bible. And everybody needs to understand that. You're helping make that possible. I am helping to make that possible. That's what the battle is about. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you again. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Do we have time? Can we take questions? All right. So I think somebody has a microphone. Is that true? And then that way everybody will hear whatever you have to say. By the way, if you want to ask me something that challenges me, I'm totally happy with it. And I'm a nice guy, so don't worry about it. Does anybody have a mic? Does anybody want to ask a question for that matter? All right. Okay, please.
Thank you for keeping me awake.
Oh, that's right. That was my task.
Thank you.
She's on New York time.
Yeah, I am. This is not a short speech, but just a buttressing of your point. We did a lot of focus groups in early 2016. And the people who self-described as Trump supporters were actually better able to describe Trump's faults in high detail than people who were unsure who to vote for but detested what they were seeing of Trump. The big defining difference was whether or not you felt that there was a crisis for the country that this election was essential to. And if you believe that this country was at that point, then you were going to vote for Trump. And you were already very clear how whatever you thought of him personally.
That's great. That it completely supports what I said.
Yeah. The question I have for you is on this borderline between what's public and what's private. I don't know how many of you have been checking your phones this evening, but we've had a second White House staffer now be accused by his wife of physical of violence, and he has resigned, even though he claims that this is absolutely not true. And my question for you is, if you were the White House, how would you handle these charges of alleged but not proven domestic abuse by your employees, and what would be your public response?
I would make clear that whether it's Republican or Democrat, we cannot run a country on the basis of divorce papers or of ex-spouses' claims. I think on that issue, believe it or not, it is one of the few where I do believe that certainly liberals, I don't know about leftists, would agree, because a lot of them are divorced also, and their exes can say anything that they want when they're in power to hurt them if that's what they want to do. I would say that I, as president, do not accept your resignation. You are free to go if you must, but if you are asking me whether to accept your resignation, I would not accept your resignation. The Chicago Tribune published the were supposed to have been the sealed divorce records of the man who ran against Barack Obama for Senate in Illinois, and I blew my stack on the radio at the time, and I said I would give almost anything to have all the divorce records of the editors of the Chicago Tribune opened to the public. Why do they get to ruin people's lives and they are never held to the same standards? It is a fraud. It is a moral fraud that we know nothing about the editors of the New York Times. They claim, well, these people have all the power. Please, the media have more power than the vast majority of politicians. I want to know everything about the divorce records and the adulterous affairs of the editors of the New York Times. And if you are not prepared to put those out, and of course, your tax returns, you should not serve as an editor at the New York Times. But it's phony. It's just, and all, by the way, all it's going to do is prevent good people or people who care about how others look upon them running for office. That's all it. This is bad for the country. This hysteria that we have now entered. But That's why I you asked me what I would do. I would reject the resignation. Next, please. Yep.
Dennis, this is Frank Gaffney. I don't know if you can see.
Yay, Frank. Give him a hand, folks. That's okay. Frank Gaffney.
In this Civil War, there seemed to me that there was a remarkable moment. I don't know if you could raise it to the level of a battle, but it certainly was a victory of sorts when the president spoke to the nation from the House floor. And the public saw, to their astonishment, what you have described as the left that made up the entire chamber, Democratic caucus. And I wonder whether you would agree with me that this is a possible defining moment in this war, to the extent that they seemed revolted by what they saw, as these Democrats passive-aggressive doesn't begin to describe their behavior, but responding to statements about our country and about its values and about its successes and its symbols, even with this kind of naked contempt.
Frank,
is that something that we can
keep the microphone? Tell me if you can answer this. Was there one left of center publication in America that condemned the Democrats at the speech?
Not that I saw.
Okay. That's how bad it has gotten. You can't even, off the top of my head, Democrats could not stand, they could not applaud when Venezuela and Cuba were described as dictatorships. That is controversial to a Democrat. It is controversial to a Democrat that people should stand for the national anthem. I mean, think of the things that they wouldn't applaud for. They wouldn't even applaud for a low black unemployment rate.
Right.
The Congressional Black Caucus wouldn't applaud for a low black unemployment rate.
But Dennis, just the quick question. If CNN's own poll of its audience found that 70% thought it was a good to great speech, is that not an opening for helping clarify the nature of the choice that they'll face come this fall?
Right. Frank, you're a good man, and that goes without saying, and you're more optimistic than I am. If that's true about the CNN audience, then I can only say, guess what my wife and I watched on election night 2016? CNN. Because we deeply believe in the joy of Schadenfreude. Never underestimate the power of Schadenfreude to bring joy to your life. That is joy at others' misery. And watching CNN that night, I'm in it. We didn't watch Fox for a minute. It was all CNN, and I'm still smiling. It gave me longevity. Honoring my parents gives you longevity. It's in the Ten Commandments. And watching CNN on election night 2016, they have both increased my years on earth. Anybody else? Yes, please.
I'm Richard Scurry. Given your belief in the Bible and given your conservatism, I'm surprised that you haven't brought up the point that the Bible frequently puts the evil on the left and the good on the right. You'll notice that Jesus sits on the right hand of God, not the left hand.
Right, yes.
In Ecclesiastes, it says that the wise right. go to the right and the foolish go to the left.
That's right. I'm not sure it's persuasive, but it's a great point, but I'm going to leave that one alone for the time being. I really have a lot more good points that I hope will be persuasive. I love that, though. Thank you. Anybody else, please?
Yes, Mr. Prager.
Yeah.
So I believe that every Prius driver in the left-hand lane is experiencing Schadenfreude at my misery. So I am thankful for you presenting a lot of concerns about what's happening on the nation's college campuses and the focus on that. But we're delivering 50 million children in public schools onto the campuses primed and ready to be further inculcated. kid. And I really think that the 13 years that children are spending in all of the public school districts across the country is something that is an indictment of conservatives for having yielded education policy, school board positions across the country, because along with that goes all the policy and all the money, and we are turning over our children to be indicted and inculcated for 13 years. So are we gonna see some more commentary on Prager University videos and from you on saving American children from the left that we're sacrificing and not getting back our nation's education system?
That's a great, great point. You know how bad it is. It was obvious from your question. I assume most of you do, but I'll give you one example. Increasingly, teachers are told, I first learned of it from North Carolina, from Charlotte. Teachers are told not to call their students, we're talking about first graders. They're told not to call their students boys and girls. They are to only refer to them as students, because we don't believe in the binary nature of gender identity, and we don't want to impose any gender identity on children. I will say, I predicted this, it's in print, I predicted this 25 years ago. The Bible is a book of distinctions. Good and evil, God and man, man and woman, life and death. And I could give you examples of each, but I won't do that right now. And the left wishes to obliterate all distinctions. Man is God. Another distinction, man and animal. We are man, the human being is just another animal. There is no gender distinction. It's non-binary, that's their phrase that they use. Good and evil are matters of opinion. One man's good is another man's evil, and one man's freedom fighter another is another man's terrorist. They are obliterating all distinctions. By the way, the word for distinct in Hebrew in the Bible is the same word as the word for holy, kadosh. Holy means distinct. You shall be distinct. Leviticus 19:1, you shall be distinct because I, the Lord, your God, am distinct. I am different, you shall be different. The obliteration of male-female distinction was the essential argument for same-sex marriage. And I said it at the beginning, I said, the argument is very, very dangerous. The argument was gender doesn't matter. Love matters. I told you, love is one of the false gods of our time. And I have in my rational Bible is a whole chapter on false gods. If love is a god, then you have no argument. There's no question gays love each other or can love each other. It's not, to deny that is to look stupid and mean even. Of course they do. But the argument was, gender doesn't matter, love does. So I said, so if gender doesn't matter, just drop the rest of it. If gender doesn't matter, then there is no male and female. That's exactly what has happened. It was inevitable that the ending of gender identity would follow same-sex marriage because it was predicated on the ending of gender identity. And this is where we're at today. I can't tell you, you mentioned kids, 1 to 13. I feel bad for them. What the left has done to children is child abuse. And I'll give you two examples. The example I just gave, I mean, one of the joys and, of course, tensions and difficulties of growing up is I'm a boy, they're girls. I don't know what they're like. This is terra incognita to me. I'm nervous. But I need to be a man. My youth was largely devoted by my tradition and by my family. Dennis, be a man. You are to grow up to be a man. And a girl was to grow up and be a woman or be a lady. Ladies and gentlemen. By the way, ladies and gentlemen has been dropped. In the New York subways, there is no longer ladies and gentlemen in any of the announcements, only riders. This followed the London Tube, which also dropped ladies and gentlemen. This is happening everywhere. Depriving children of the joy of their identity as a male or female is child abuse. To tell any kid who thinks at the age of 7, hey, you know, I feel like I'm a girl. Okay, you can, you know, that I understand that. And in a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of human beings, that never changes. The vast majority of kids who feel that they're the other sex are going through a period of feeling that, which will pass. But you're not allowed any longer to say it will pass. You cannot say, you know what, Johnny, you're a boy. Even if you feel that you're a girl, you are a boy. What I just said is regarded as hate. I regard it as hate not to say it to Johnny. We have a different understanding. It is a completely different understanding of the way we should love children. I admit it. My motto of my show is I prefer clarity to agreement. I don't give a damn if we agree. I just want to be clear. You think that saying to an 8-year-old, you know what, if you feel you're a girl, you really are a girl, versus my feeling, you know what, Johnny, you really are a boy. If this continues at 19, then I understand we may have one of those rare individuals with gender dysphoria. It's a curse. It's a tragedy. My heart goes out to such people. But in the vast majority of cases, they outgrow it. It's not to be honored, let alone giving hormone blockers to 11-year-olds and to 8-year-olds. That is sadism. This is sick. But of course it's sick. Because of the great, great line of Psalms, wisdom begins with fear of God. No fear of God, no wisdom. That's why the stupidest place in America is the university. Because it's the most godless place in the United States. So that's why I'll give you a second example of child abuse. All those parents who are telling their daughters that society is misogynist, that society is sexist, that you are oppressed. To grow up feeling oppressed is a curse. It's just a curse. It is a curse laid on girls. It is a curse laid on blacks. It is a curse laid on Hispanics. It is a curse laid on everyone other than white, Christian, heterosexual males. You're all oppressed. I just spoke to, for this movie we're making, I just spoke in Atlanta 2 days ago at a black college to 6 black students for about 40 minutes. And they were absolutely certain they're oppressed. When I said to them, I don't believe you're oppressed, they were stunned. They didn't yell at me, they were very polite. They were stunned. And I said, not only do I not think you're oppressed, I don't think women are oppressed in America either. They were shocked about that. I am convinced they had never been face to face with a human being in America who said to them that they're not oppressed. My father raised 2 boys, so did my mother, but I'm gonna give my father as the example for a reason. There was just my brother and myself in our family as the children, and my father, his senior class thesis for City College of New York was on anti-Semitism in the United States. All the country clubs that didn't allow Jews, the quotas on Jews at Ivy League colleges and other colleges, the law firms that didn't allow Jews and so on. Nevertheless, my father raised my brother and me to believe that we were the luckiest Jews in Jewish history for living in America. My father gave me a gift. I grew up with 0 chip on my shoulder. I saw the non-Jew in America as my friend, not as my enemy. When I think of the way black kids are raised today, to believe, as Charles Blow says with pride in the New York Times, where he writes an angry column twice a week, he tells his children, don't trust whites. It's an astonishing, what a burden. That's child abuse. Now, I know whatever I say goes public, so I am prepared to say Charles Blow, though not wishing to do so, has engaged in child abuse. He has hurt his children by teaching them to walk around thinking they are oppressed, that whites can't be trusted. And I thank God that my father, who wrote a thesis on anti-Semitism in America, raised his boys to know that the non-Jew in America was not our enemy, that the average non-Jew was not an anti-Semite, that the Christians of America were not the same Christians who brought us the Inquisition in Spain in 1492. And that has stood me well in life, because I love America's Christians, and I get love, and I get love back. And it's all thanks to my father's healthy attitude, despite knowing that there was anti-Semitism, that we were the most blessed Jews in Jewish history to live in America. That's a good point to leave you on. Thank you very, very much. Thank you again. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.